It's funny because the Sefer HaChinuch usually goes into somewhat more detail about the laws of the mitzvah than he did last time when we were talking about Lashon Hara, whereas he was so excited to get into this discussion of Moser, which was not really the main topic of the mitzvah at hand, but he was so excited that he forgot something. He forgot to mention something very fundamental with the mitzvah of Lashon Hara, which I've been waiting a month to add on to his discussion, which is the issue of Avak Lashon Hara, which is the secondary Lashon Hara, which Rabbi Feldman writes about extensively in his book, which is that not only is it prohibited to state explicit negative information about others, even if it's true, but one is not even allowed to state things that will cause others to imagine negative things about the person. There are many different shittas about what Avak Lashon Hara exactly is. Should be Nizar in all of them, because the Gemara says in Bava Basra that this is the mitzvah that the Jewish people are nichshal, and everybody does Avak Lashon Hara. It says, most people are nichshal at one time or another in using another's property not in accordance with halacha. Some are nichshal in arayos, in forbidden relationships, but everybody at one point or another is nichshal in avak lashon hara, saying the secondary lashon hara. So examples may include, according to different shitas, for example, if you say, somebody mentions a person's name, and you say, oh, I don't want to talk about that person, I can't. That's avak lashon hara. Mm-hmm. Or if you're talking to someone who you know doesn't like this other person, and you start praising this person, which is going to cause the person who doesn't like him to start speaking negatively. What? What? You think he's so good at this? No, I saw that he did this and this and this. No, you can't do that. Another example, actually, which is really something positive, which, according to some sheet, this could be Avak Lashon Hara, is you say, oh, this person? So they serve, steak every Shabbos, and they have their table is full of guests, and, you know, it's so wonderful. So now everybody you speak to is going to think, I need a last-minute Shabbos meal, so they have guests all the time, and they have such wonderful food. So before you know it, these people were having 3 guests at their Shabbos meals. Now they're having 12 guests at their Shabbos meals, because it's anything that could cause certain damage or certain negative things to happen to the person. Eventually, a negative thing is going to come out of it, even if the thing itself is completely positive. There's absolutely nothing purely Lashon Hara think about saying such a thing, obviously, but it's more under the principle of Avak Lashon Hara. So again, just to mention it, because I didn't want to go completely without mentioning it, the idea of secondary Lashon Hara, the things that are not explicit negative statements, that could be considered secondary Lashon Hara. I mean, there's the famous story about someone who was talking to the Chofetz Chaim and said, Chofetz Chaim, I bought your book, I read it, now I feel like I can't talk at all. I'm afraid every minute I'm going to transgress the prohibitions of Lashon Hara. So Chofetz Chaim said, you have it wrong. He said, before you couldn't open your mouth, now you know it, now that you read it, you know how to speak. And they say that the Chofetz Chaim actually was a relatively sociable, talkative person, because he knew all the dinim. He was Nizar, so he knew he didn't have to be nervous all the time as to what he was going to say, because he knew that it was going to be fine all the time. Okay. Continuing, mitzvah, Reish Lamed Zayin, 237, Shelo La'amod Al Dam Re'im, not to stand by the blood of one's friends, not literally friends, fellow Jews. Shelo Nimna Milahatzel Nefesh Mi'Yisrael, what does it mean? That we need to save another if we see something going on. We shouldn't prevent ourselves, we shouldn't refrain from saving someone else. Kishinirehu B'Sakonas Hamisa V'Ha'Aveda, that if he could suffer bodily harm or other type of harm, if there's any way that we could save this person, you shall not stand idly by the blood of your fellow. The Gemara says, Tanya, minayin leroes chaveru shetoveya benahar ochaya gorarto, olistim ba'im alav, shuchayev latzilo benafsho. So how do we know that if you see someone drowning or being dragged by a wild animal or that bandits are coming to attack this person, you have to strongly exert effort to save this person's life? This is this pasuk. So it's a famous pasuk also, by the way. You should mention it here. A statement of Chazal that this even trumps other things that you might not feel to be appropriate. We have this famous statement of what the Gemara calls a chassid shota, a pious fool, or foolish pious person, rather, which is if you see a woman drowning in the river, and you say, you know, if I try to save her, so I might have inappropriate thoughts, so I'm not going to save her. So you see that this principle trumps other things in halacha. So the Gemara says, obviously, you're not supposed to do that, even if you are afraid you might have certain thoughts, then you still save the woman who's drowning. V'lo mibaya tzloy nafshei d'mechayev ela mitrach v'agir nami agiri d'chayev. I'm sorry, chayev. So not only do you have to yourself go and assist the person, but you might think, well, let's say there's someone in a wheelchair or something and somebody's being attacked by bandits, so the person in the wheelchair is not going to get very far trying to fend off the bandits. So if he has the ability, so he has to take his cell phone, call somebody who can help, and the person might say, well, I'm not really in the mood to help right now, and he has to offer money. The person has to spend his own money in order to hire people who are capable of saving his fellow Jew from this bodily harm. The Minchas Chinuch brings a discussion that it says here, in the name of the Yerushalmi, actually, which is not found in the Yerushalmi in front of us, but some authorities bring it from the Yerushalmi, which is obviously a very weighty source, which states that even if you are going to enter a state of suffix sakana, that maybe you'll have damage incurred to yourself, you even to the extent that you might die from it, then you have to save a fellow Jew. That's the statement that's brought by the Hagos Maimonius in the name of the Yerushalmi. But since the Minchas Chinuch points out that this statement is not found in the classical Rishonim, either they didn't have that statement in the Yerushalmi, or they felt that the Talmud Bavli disagreed with this Yerushalmi, so the Minchas Chinuch points out that the general consensus of the poskim is that that's not true. You don't have to put yourself into a state of suffix sakana, to a doubt as to maybe you'll incur serious bodily harm in order to save a fellow Jew. Again, this is not like the din of Yehorik Valyavor. That's, you know, if you have to get killed rather than kill someone else, because that means you're doing something actively to kill that person. But if you're not, the other way doesn't make sense, because if you're not doing anything active and the person says, and the person is, you know, somebody fired a shot and you have the opportunity of running in front of the bullet, so what do you mean? You have the same svara, just like over there, that the reason you're not allowed to kill the other person is, how do you know maybe his blood is redder than yours? How do you know your blood is redder than his? So here you have the same thing. How do you know his blood is redder than yours? Maybe your blood is redder. So it doesn't really make sense that you should put yourself into a suffix sakana in order to save another person. I was thinking also on the way over that this could apply also to organ donations. That according to the simple understanding, if you're a match as a donor for someone, for an organ or blood, bone marrow or any of these types of things, so the surgery involves bodily harm. That, again, if it's a perfectly safe surgery, there's one in a million chance that something, anything negative would happen to you, so then you are required. But if there's a surgery that could cause serious harm and potentially down the line, let's say you donate a kidney or something, and then, who knows, maybe later in life, you're going to have kidney problems, and you're going to now have it worse because you donated a kidney. So something like that. So it's not obligatory to donate to another person if it could cause yourself bodily harm. If you want to, so that's, you might think that would fall under the prohibition of Chabola, that one's not allowed to cause oneself harm. But it seems to be that for this case, then it would be, as our previous rabbi can attest, he obviously felt it was permitted, that if you would like to do that, if you would like to donate, even if it involves some harm to yourself, so you are allowed to do it. Maybe if there's a majority chance that you will suffer serious harm to your life, then maybe you're not allowed. But if there's only a small chance, like if you donate these organs where you have two of them, so probably nothing's going to happen if you donate one. So then it's more likely to be allowed, especially to help another person. V'od kalalu zichronam livracha. Bazharizo shelo lichbosh edus. The Chazal tell us that part of this mitzvah is one's not allowed to withhold testifying. Kedei shelo yave chaveru mamono. So in other words, so if you're, there's a court case and a person stands to lose money if you don't testify, then you have to testify, because you're not allowed to stand idly by while somebody's going to incur unjust harm.
Is it possible, if you are called as a witness, in front of a grandstand, Is it possible for you to say, I refuse to answer the question? I mean,
no.
No.
I mean, it's possible. Halachically allowed, no.
Okay, so then you obviously you have to testify. In other words, they're saying if you...
No, that's because of this din.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kedei shelo yabi chaver baske v'chein hu b'sifro. That's what it says. Nalach medrash and sefer v'ekra. Min ayin shim you know dalo edos she'ino rashi lishtok aleiv. You know edos. You're not allowed to testify.
Of course, the edos could be damaging to this person exclusively. So
yeah. It's going to help the other guy.
Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. Right. If it's for a secular court and your testimony is going to hurt the Jew, then you have. Right.
If
problems.
If it's a criminal case, then...
Right, you have this issue that we were talking about of Masira last time, that if it's a just system and the person really should pay the non-Jew the money according to Allah also, so then it'll be okay, but there could be more problems if you had to testify in a secular court. But in a Beis Din, you have to testify everything that you know. Shanem, you can't say you plead the fifth, you can't say, you know, why don't I want to get involved in this, I'm going to have to enter the witness protection program, I'm not going to, why do I, Mali v'latzara azos, what do I need this for? Not allowed, you have to testify. Shanem, lo samo dal dam riacho, minayin shim reiso toveya banar, again, it says the same thing about if you see somebody drowning in the river. Again, if you don't, the same principle apply. If you don't know how to swim very well,
you shouldn't go.
So that would not be advisable to you. You would have to call Hatzalah or lifeguard or whatever to save this person. But it would not be a good idea to go try to save the person yourself. Umanayin lerodef achar chaveru lahorgo shata chayiv latzila benafsho. Shnei marlo samod adam riacha. So we have a separate din, which we mentioned a few times before, which is that. If somebody, this is what we call a rodef, that if somebody is running after another person to either kill, rape, harm in general, so then you have to, you can inflict bodily harm upon the rodef, the person who's chasing after the other person, in order to save the nirdaf, the person who's being chased, from undergoing this harm. And you're supposed to try to, if at all possible, you know, maim the person, before actually killing them, if maiming or if it's impossible, you can't do it fast enough, then you have to, you must, it's a requirement, you must kill the person in order to avoid causing damage to the nirdaf, which is a special din, because obviously there's a din generally of Yehorig Valyav, where you're not allowed to kill another person in order to save your life, but if there's somebody whose intention is made clear to kill another person, so obviously you have to save the person from incurring this damage. Okay, v'noheges b'chol. I'm sorry. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua. The reasoning for this mitzvah is well known. Ki kemoshe yatzel aechad es chaveru, kein chaveru yatzel oso. So it's we wanted to make a pact between all the Jews that they're all going to save each other, and that's going to help society function. V'yishashiv ha'olam b'chach v'ho'el chafetz b'yishuvo ki l'shev v'zitzara. God wants society to function and people to populate the world with and be in peace with each other. So they should all help and assist and save each other from harm. So I'll explain the Masechah Sanhedrin. And it applies equally to men and women. If you violated this and you refrain from helping the person and you could do it, you violated this negative commandment. This is obviously a lav shein b'maisa. If you refrain from doing something, you're sitting there doing nothing, so there's no action involved, so therefore you don't get the penalty of Malkus. You don't get the penalty of Malkus. Okay.
You've got to hear that the Pidyon Shvuyim is actually, from this mitzvah, there's no separate mitzvah to Pidyon Shvuyim.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know, I ask you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He doesn't mention it again, leaving things out, but you're right. You have to redeem Jewish captives, very important as well. Okay. Mitzvah Reish Lamed Ches, but there's also the din there that you're not allowed to redeem captives for more than their fair market value, because that's going to cause them to if the people know that they're going to get the people the shovim, the people who took the people captive, know that they can get extra money for Jews, then they're going to target Jews. Okay, Mitzvah Reish Lamed Ches 138. Shelo lisno achim. Not to hate brothers. Shelo lisno sinas halev echad mi Yisrael. That one's not allowed to hate in the heart any Jew. Shenemar, lo sisnas achicha bilavecha. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thy heart. Lashon sifra, lo amarti el asina shehi balev. The halachic medrash says that this is only referring to hatred that remains in the heart. Uchmochen be'erchin besina shebalev hakasim adavar. The Gemara says the same thing. Aval kishiyare lo sina viyadua shehu sono. When you demonstrate your hatred, that's a different din. Eino over alav zeh. Azahalav, omnam hu over alosikom velositor. That if you say, well, I'm not going to do this favor for you, I remember all these bad things that you did to me, if you mention those things explicitly, then that's a violation of the prohibitions that we're going to get to in three mitzvahs from now, which is that not to take revenge, and that has different manifestations, but if you demonstrate your hatred, that's not this mitzvah per se, it's different mitzvahs. Over kemochein alaseh, you violate a positive commandment as well. Shenemar v'yohav tal reicha kemocha. And this parasha as well, it says, "Thou shalt love thy friend as thyself." U'mikol makom sinas halev he koshem mikol sina geluya ve'aleh tazira Torah biyoser. That in some ways, if you allow hatred to fester in your heart without being able to discuss it, then it's even worse because it could lead to worse things. So as we'll see in a minute. Shoresh ha-mitzvah yadua, ki sinas ha-leiv goremes roz gedolos vein b'nei adam lios tamir cherev ish be'achi ve'ish be'rei'ehu, that people are going to literally set their swords against their friends, not friends, but whatever, colleagues, co-religionists, if they maintain hatred in their hearts. V'usiba l'chol ha-mesiros ha-nasos bein anoshim v'u'abida p'chusa v'anim eses tachlos ha-mios b'nei kol ba'al seichel, that this character trait is considered completely repulsive by anyone who has some intelligence. And this is the reason that any mesiris is going to happen, that people are going to speak, can try to turn each other in, it's no good. Prati ha-mitzvah, the rubei ha-tzaru she-iziranu, izirun zirvan al-bracha le'a, that all the details that the Chazal told us not to engage in this, shelo lahargil nafsheinu v'mida ra'azo, mevar metamlu v'pizor midrashos, that we have to train ourselves not to hate, even if we feel ourselves developing a strong dislike for someone else. We're not allowed to let that develop into the next level of real hatred. So what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to approach the person. You're not supposed to just let the hatred fester. You're supposed to approach the person and say, you know, you did this to me and I really hurt my feelings. So, therefore, I'd like to inform you of it, and that gives the other person the opportunity to ask for forgiveness, and therefore to repair your relationship. Whereas if you just think, you think you're going to be able to maintain normal contact, but really you can't stop thinking about the thing that the other person's, that's going to fester, and then the person's going to do another thing, and instead of going on a clean slate, that's already going to go on top of the hatred that's been developing, it's just going to fester more and more. So, therefore, you have to discuss it with the other person. As, you know, contemporary psychology will say, the importance of being open and, you know, with other people. And you cannot let the feelings just build up. You have to talk to them about it. B'nagas b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zchar m'nekevos, with males and females. V'over alea v'kava sinna b'libo l'echad mikol Yisrael haksherim over alavze. That if you violate this and you establish hatred in your heart regarding any Jew, then you violated this commandment. The ain lokin alav lefish ain ba mice. Again, it has no malchus because there's no action associated. Besinas harishayim ain bo iser. You are allowed to hate wicked people because when all these things, it says reacha, your friend. So what does it mean, friend? Friend means fellow Jews who act in the way that Jews are supposed to act. But if they're wicked, wicked people, then you're not. Then you are allowed to hate them, and you mela mitzvah this knows them. You should hate them. We'll talk in the next mitzvah about the rebuking people who are not acting appropriately. So it's the same thing over here. If you rebuke them appropriately and they continue down their wicked path, then it's no good. Then you are allowed to hate them. So the Minchas Chinuch actually brings an interesting discussion. He says, why would you be allowed to hate them in your heart? That doesn't do anything. You are allowed to, you know, say things or act in a way like take revenge that you're not allowed with fellow Jews. Why should you be allowed to hate them in your heart? He's not sure about, he's not sure in the end. He ends with a tzarechion.
Now, examples of the sort of evildoers that were, you know, this doesn't apply. I mean, is it
the... It means people who Not, it means people who really rebel against Judaism.
Not somebody who wears tefillin and chol hamoed. Okay, that's not.
No. Real, it also doesn't apply, presumably, to non-observant Jews who don't know any better. So they're not, you're not allowed to hate them. But this is talking, remember, that what is the Sefer Chinuch says that it applies to someone who's properly rebuked and doesn't want to return to... But on the other hand, in the different type of Jewish community that we have nowadays, in the old days it was an organized community. People who were against it, there was the community, and then they went against it. Here, you have a free country, you have a plethora of options to choose from, so it doesn't help anything. They're just going to be more, if you hate them, they're just going to be more estranged from Judaism, less likely to come back.
Right.
So you have to, to judge based on whether it's productive to hate the person or not productive to hate the person. Mm-hmm. That's the main criteria. Mm-hmm. Criterion. Shnemar, halo misanecha, Hashem esnav, iskom emecha, eskotet. That the Pasuk in Tehillim says that we hate those who hate God, and with those who go up against you, we will fight. But again, it's very, very subjective. It's really, nowadays, it would really be a very small, I think, category of people that one would really be allowed to hate in their hearts. And again, we see here that the Minchas Chinuch says... The Minchas Chinuch disagrees with the whole thing. That he says that maybe there's no heter at all, the hate in your heart. Somebody just because they're a Russia, just because they're a wicked person. They're certainly not subject to the active things, like, you know, there are certain things where they have to be a Jew in good standing in order to get the protection of the mitzvah, like we were just talking about Lashon Hara. That the only people that are subject to the rules of Lashon Hara are observant Jews who maintain the Jewish traditions. Someone is not an observant Jew or not Jewish. So, again, in terms of the midos that it instills within you, which is a major topic of Rabbi Feldman's book, so obviously it's not a good idea to speak ill of people to go at any point. But if something, the technical rules of Lashon Hara in all their detail do only apply to our fellow Orthodox, to use contemporary terminology, even Orthodox. Shomer mitzvot, even better. That's very good. So Shomer Jews who are Shomer mitzvot, or at least try to be.
I mean, presumably the justification, and I agree, I mean, I'm not attacking him at all, that Rabbi Gordimer would use, for example, now having retired from the battle, at least for the moment, but for having thrown himself into all that, is that, in effect, a rebuke. I mean, that...
Oh, absolutely. That's going to be the next
mitzvah.
But 100%.
He makes it very clear that he doesn't hate, you know, he's not acting out of hatred.
No, he actually is very careful to constantly...
Right, 100%.
Some people are maybe not so careful to make that point.
But I assume... Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm naive, but I assume that most regular people, Jews who attend open Orthodox congregations and associate themselves with open Orthodoxy, are lemaisa shomer mitzvos to a high enough standard that they would not be considered to be outside this klal.
Okay, but what presumably he's arguing is that
he's talking to the leaders.
They're standing for something that is not
right. 100%. But as long as you. Again, if you believe that women should be able to do X, Y, and Z, which they traditionally haven't been allowed to do, that doesn't make you outside Klal Yisrael. It may not be good, but if you keep Shabbos and Kashrus and you believe in God and the Mesorah and whatever, so then Lubaisa made you stay. You're still a kosher Jew, probably for these purposes. Okay, mitzvah Reish Lamed Tes, which is a very related mitzvah. Reish Lamed Tes 239 is mitzvahs tochacha liYisrael she'enu noy kishur. The mitzvah to rebuke a fellow Jew who is not acting properly. Lochiach echad miYisrael she'enu misnai kishur. To rebuke Jews who are not acting properly. Bein bedvarim shebein adam lachaveru o bein adam lamakom. This applies both with mitzvahs that are interpersonal and in relationship to God. You shall surely rebuke your fellow and not bear a sin upon him. Damer b'sifra d'alach ha'gmedrash says, minayin im hochachto arba v'chamesh b'amim v'lo chazar, shetach hayav lachzor lochiach. Maybe you're going to give up if you only rebuke this person 4 or 5 times. But no, you have to continue. Tamalomer hochiach tochiach. Thou shalt surely rebuke. You have to keep doing it till you see results. V'od amru zichronam levracha. We'll see in a second, it's not exactly true. The old Amr Zikran al Racha, but Gemara Ochiach Tochiach Afilu Meya Pa'amim. The Gemara says, even 100 times. Doesn't mean literally you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It means that even you have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Okay. The Amr Sham B'Sifra, Laching Medra says more, Yochol Melchicha Ofanav Mishtanos. Maybe you should rebuke him in a manner that embarrasses him. Panav Mishtanos means that he changes complexion out of embarrassment. You shall not bear iniquity on him, meaning that you shouldn't have a sin based on your rebuke of this person, meaning that there's a separate prohibition, as we'll see later, not to embarrass people publicly. So you're not allowed, or even privately here in this case, that even if you approach this person in a manner which embarrasses him or her for violating this prohibition, even just in front of you, then that's also no good. You have to...
How do you know that?
Let's say somebody's holding a food that he forgot to check for the hechsher, and you know it doesn't have a hechsher, so you go up to this person in a room and you grab the thing. How could you buy this without a hechsher? You have to look. How could you do that? So that's, and this person's going to be embarrassed that he didn't do it. Whereas you have to say, I mean, that's not really, forgetting to look for, that's not the greatest example, because forgetting to look for hechsher is not a sin per se, it's a laxity, it's a lapse of judgment, it's a lapse of memory, but you get my point, that if you're supposed to go over to the person and say, oh, that candy, I hear it's really good, but I think they might have lost, I thought I saw a kashrus alert recently that maybe they lost their hechsher, maybe you should check to make sure this is from the, you know, the old batch, this is from the old batch that still had the hechsher, because it could be from the new batch that didn't, maybe you didn't know. Yeah, you get the idea of the difference in tone, even if that's not the best example in terms of sin that the person's doing. At the beginning of the rebuke, you're supposed to do it quietly and nicely. Kadesh is bayish, so you shouldn't get embarrassed. But if the person does not renege and continues going on the poor behavior, then you can put billboards and say, you know, with a person's picture and say, this person is a sinner! But that's after, you know, so you try several times with a, you know, way, the quieter way. Not necessarily 100 times. If it becomes clear that the person is not going to respond to the private, quiet rebuke, then you're allowed to do it publicly. Again, I would limit this into a time when there is an organized Jewish community and public shame is going to work. Maybe in an insular Hasidic community, maybe it would work. But nowadays, this would probably just drive people away from Judaism at all. So again, we have to use what we're reading now in the Sefer HaChinuch. Have to use very careful judgment before applying it lemaisa in our times, but nevertheless, this is the law that is on the books, that one is allowed to publicly shame a person who is committing an avera. I mean, they still do this for gittin, when they have recalcitrant spouses who are not participating in the get process, so they do publicly shame the person in order to get results. Mishor sheha mitzvah. The reasoning behind this mitzvah is as follows. Shalom v'tova bein anoshim. Eventually, this is, even if not in the immediate aftermath of the rebuke, but eventually this is going to maintain peace and harmony within the Jewish people. That this is also a corollary of the previous mitzvah, not to hate, that when somebody sins against you and you rebuke the person privately, that if the person you give the, if you rebuke the person, then he gives the person the opportunity to apologize. You're going to develop hatred in your heart if you don't rebuke the person, which is the thing we were trying to avoid in the last mitzvah. And eventually, you're going to lash out and you're going to cause harm to the person who offended you. So there's a famous, a very interesting story in Sefer Shmuel, which is that, as we know, David HaMelech had many wives. So there were two children from one wife who were named Avshalom, who had their rebellion eventually, and Tamar. He had a full sister named Tamar. And there was another son from a different wife whose name was Amnon. So Amnon had his sights on Tamar, his half-sister. So he concocted a ruse to get her in with him in a private room, and he had his way with her. And then it says that after that, he didn't like her anymore. But what happened over there, after this event occurred, that Amnon raped his half-sister Tamar, so her full brother Avshalom, it said, was not too thrilled with his half-brother Amnon for defiling his full sister. I guess in the olden days where people had a lot more, I mean, it happens nowadays too, obviously, but it was a much more common occurrence in the olden days that people had half-siblings, so you felt more allegiance to perhaps your full siblings than your half-siblings. So Avshalom was very distressed at what happened to his full sister, so he hated Avshalom in his heart. Well, according to it, would have been a little bit awkward if Avshalom would say, you know, excuse me, Amnon, I really think that you need to apologize for this poor behavior on your part. But whatever, he should have done something. He should have spoken to him. He should have gotten his feelings out, so to speak. Because what ended up happening is Avshalom ended up arranging for Amnon's death for his in order to punish him for what he did to his sister. Basically, the Sefer HaKinuch is just using this as an example of what can happen if you don't rebuke and you just keep it bottled up inside. The ways of the Torah are pleasantness and its paths are peace. Famous Pasuk in Mishlei. Midine HaMitzvah, the lochos of the mitzvah, as follows. Masham Rezichonim Levracha, Shechiyu Mitzvah Zo Ad Hakaah. There's a three-way machlokes in Maseches Erchin, which talks about a lot of the mitzvahs ben adam lachavero. It's very interesting why, it's, by the way, they're found there. But there's a three-way machlokes. One is until the person being rebuked hits you. The other one is until they spurn you, and the other one is until they curse you. So we pass in like the question why we should pass in like this, because Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says spurn nezifa. So we should normally pass in like Rabbi Yochanan, because we always normally pass in like Rabbi Yochanan. But here we paskin like Rav, that it's until hakah, until the person hits you. Or until the person is about to hit you, at least. Kilomar, shechayev amochiach laharbos tochachosa velachote ad kidei shiye karov achote lachosas amochiach. Right. You don't have to wait till you actually get a black eye from this person, but until you get the sense that it just isn't going anymore and the person is going to hit you. Right, there is a sheet that he quotes, I'm sorry. The Rambam says that it's actually until he hits you, but it seems to be that maybe it's Lav Davka. When we call Makom, Amr Zichron al-Vracha, Gam Kein, Shim Yira Amochiach, Shein Bedivre Tochachosav, Shum Toeles Nimtza, Mitoch Godel Resha Achote, that if the person is so far gone that your words of rebuke are just completely falling on deaf ears, Oshuish Alam, the Rasha, Beyoser, Misyari Menu, Shol Yamod al-Vyargenu, that the person is so wicked and violent, you're just afraid to approach him, lest the person completely go off in a rage on you, then you're not obligated to do this at the expense of your, safety in general. And it's also interesting because there is a shita, which sounds like the Rama Paskins like in Hilchos Yom Kippur, when he talks about rebuking fellows and asking for forgiveness, that nevertheless, even if the person is this category of is not going to listen, is going to harm you, so you still have to say something at least once. You're not totally off the hook. You don't have to keep going 100 times like you do normally, but you used to have to make some calm, happy comment as much as possible about maybe the person wants to repent and change their behavior. But I think that the normal assumption is like the Sefer HaKinuch, that if you really fear that the person is going to it's just not going to work, and the person's just going to get back at you and be upset with you, then, I mean, in a way that's beyond normal standards of behavior, then you do not have to do it. V'zeh Omram Zichron Levracha, K'shem Shemitzah Lomar Davar HaNishma, Kach Mitzah Lishtog B'mokom Sheina Davar Nishma. So that sages say, that just as a mitzah to say something that will be heard and accepted, so it's a mitzah to be silent and not say something if it will not be accepted by the person to whom you're speaking. So here there's nothing to be gained. You, the rebuker, are going to lose out and have your standing diminished or safety compromised, and the person that you're trying to rebuke is not going to change. So, again, we have the point is, again, that you have to use seichel over here. That you have to rebuke, and if you think it's going to get go somewhere, then you rebuke and rebuke and rebuke. But if it's not going to do anything, so there's no point. It's like if we have non-frum relatives or friends, so every time you see them and you say, oh, you know, are you thinking of repenting yet? You know, I think maybe it's time to repent. So that's just going to harm your relationship. It's not going to get anywhere. If you think you can be makar of the person, so great, you know, that's wonderful. But if you do this is just silly. Oh, the Sefer Chinuch is telling us himself that we have to meditate on this, and we have to sit down, you know, not literally, but to dwell on whether this on all these things. If there's really going to be a chance of success if you rebuke the person, that you shouldn't just, you know, bow out fast because you think that, you know, it's not going to work. You could be a little chutzpahdik. You could cross the line a little bit with the faith that if you're really honestly rebuking someone else for the sake of God, that God is going to help you find the right words. And your heart should not become soft. You shouldn't fear. The famous pasuk from what we know as Ashrei, that God is going to save those who love Him and is going to destroy the wicked. Because you may have somewhat what to lose if your rebuke doesn't work, but if your rebuke does work, then you get amazing reward that you have a chelek in this person repenting. If you really could have had said something and that you didn't, who nispas al cheto, then you're considered to be responsible partially for the person's sin. That this is clear from the words of Chazal and also from the pasuk, that the pasuk says in Yeshaya that God will extract judgment from the elders and the officers of the people. So meaning because the elders didn't rebuke the officers, therefore they are part and parcel of the sin itself. So that's very important to keep in mind. Again, just to emphasize that if you don't think if you really thought about it honestly and you don't think that your rebuke is going to work, then you don't have to do it. But you shouldn't be so quick to say, you know, rebuking is uncomfortable. It is uncomfortable to rebuke others, to tell people they're doing something wrong. It's uncomfortable for both parties involved. But if you really could push yourself and you really think that your words have a chance of working, then it's a very big mitzvah to do it in such a case. And it's also scary for clergy members that you have to also be very careful as to what, because it's our job to a certain extent to increase the level of observance of the congregation. And again, you have to know when not to say things. Sometimes people are not going to listen to certain things, and you have to know what's appropriate to say and what words might have an effect. But if there's something that the clergy could have addressed in sermons and personal discussions and whatever, and help the person improve, and didn't do it, so it's points against the rabbis for not speaking out when they should have. There's a funny story I heard. I did not witness it in person, but in the Breuer's mikvah on Erev Rosh Hashanah and Erev Yom Kippur, so they have two pools, two mikvah pools in the Breuer's mikvah, and well, it's exchanging rooms or something. So one of the changing rooms and one of the mikvah pools is set aside for rabbis. So they shouldn't have to mix with the hamunam that are in such a, you know, a compromising situation, perhaps, setting. So sometimes you go, it's really only supposed to be used by rabbanim, people in real rabbinical positions. Rosh Yeshiva, rabbanim, whatever. So apparently one time, somebody came to the Brewer's Mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur, and there was a very long line for the regular changing rooms and the regular mikvah pool. So he says to the attendant, you know, I have smicha. Can I use the rabbi's room and skip the line? So the attendant responded, if you want to be judged tomorrow like a rav, you can use the rabbi's room.
Very good.
He says, okay, I'll wait online. Okay. V'od amru zichronim livracha, shafilu hakatan chayev lochiach hagadol. That even, you shouldn't think of your personal status as getting in the way. So even if a little kid sees an adult violating a clear halacha, then he has to rebuke the adult. V'im yireh hagadol holech b'derech lotov. If he sees that the person is really doing an objective sin, and his words could be heard, would be potentially accepted. V'yeser prati mitzvah zon izbar v'mekomos mefuzarim v'talmud. All the details of this mitzvah are found in scattered places in the Talmud. The famous classic case that we have in the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch is the case of women. If they use the example, it could be anyone. But the case of women who used to eat and drink on Erev Yom Kippur right until the last moment. They used to be so nervous about fasting the next day, and that they would be so uncomfortable and hungry and thirsty. They wouldn't have Tosefes Yom Kippur. We know it's a mitzvah d'oraisa that you have to add on to Yom Kippur more than the time where that's Bein HaShemashas, so that you're not sure if it's already nighttime or if Yom Kippur has really started. You have to add some time that's certainly not Yom Kippur on the day before and after Yom Kippur and start fasting and observing Yom Kippur early at that time. So the Gemara discusses if you have to rebuke these women, again, it could be anyway, I'm just saying this as an example. Nowadays, women are more religious, perhaps, than the men in many ways, so maybe we should switch the genders. But in the classic source, it's talking about the women. So it said, should you rebuke the women or not? The Gemara says, no, you don't have to rebuke the women because they're probably not going to listen, A. And B, so that's called the principle of mutav shiu shogegin valyu mezidim, that better they should do a sin b'shogeg than do a sin b'mezid. Once you tell them about it, now they know about it. Before, they didn't know that they're supposed to add time to Yom Kippur. And second of all, it's not written explicitly in the Torah. So even though it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, it doesn't say in the Torah, and it's derived from the verse in the Torah. It doesn't say explicitly anywhere in the Torah. So basically the principle is, if something's not written explicitly in the Torah, and you feel that it would be better not to inform the person that there is such a sin, so they should do it b'shogeg, then you don't have to rebuke. But if something is written explicitly in the Torah, or you feel that your words, again, might have an effect, then you do have to rebuke the person for violating any type of sin. But that's something good to know when you apply the principle of better that they should do a sin b'shogeg than b'mezid. B'noheges, mitzvah zo b'chol makom u'b'chol zman. It applies in all places and all times to both males and females. And you violate this and you don't rebuke in a situation where you should rebuke. Again, the specific specifics we just discussed. You neglected to perform a positive commandment. You consider to be a wicked person because you beshita, you don't rebuke. No, well, what everybody does is their business, that we don't accept that idea in Judaism, that we're all responsible for each other. And again, if you could rebuke and didn't, then you bear a part of the other person's sin.
So in other words, even though, if practically speaking, you don't think there's a case where you really feel like, you know, it's proper for you to, you know, engage in tochacha, that still you can't say, well, the mitzvah doesn't exist.
Never a case ever where it would be proper for you to engage in tochacha?
That it's very unlikely that you're going to, you know, given all of the, you know, of the problems associated with it,
you still have to do it to the best of your ability. If there is true, if you really assess honestly in every case where you could potentially do tochacha that your words would do more harm than good, then yes, you'd be exempt from this mitzvah forever. But it's on a case by case basis. It's not that you say, oh, you know, I don't rebuke. It's hard for me. It's not my nature. So that is what's not allowed.